Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Stanley. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another episode of BS Car Guys Podcast. Tonight, we're talking about some things. We're going to talk about some car shows that have been going on and maybe some cars that were revealed or that caught our attention, and also the strike. We're going to kind of do a little follow-up post-strike, if you will.
Post-strike, and you're not blurry anymore. Did I blink?
I unblurred my background. If I'm not on a business call, I'm like, I don't like that blurry background business. So I unblurred my background.
See,
for,
I can see
for the... all of our listeners that can actually see us. Oh, wait, that's none because we don't put it on YouTube, Stanley.
Well, you know, sometimes
we, I haven't thrown you under that bus in a while. So
I don't think people need to see us pick our nose in the middle of talking sometimes or
what?
My ugly. I mean, your hair is gorgeous, and your eyebrow is really doing a thing right now. I don't know what's up.
I don't know what's up with my eyebrow tonight. I got old man brows.
Yeah,
I can't help it. I look like a wild man in the back of the nursing home, hanging out the side of his wheelchair. You can come give me some candy. I don't know. That's just where I went.
Yeah. But you do have a very nice sweater on. I like that sweater.
I also am wearing an old man sweater. I'm full grandpa vibing it. Look at this. Look. I even have on, underneath the old man sweater, I just want you to see, I didn't even put on a different shirt. I just have my white undershirt, V-neck undershirt on underneath my old man sweater. I'm straight grandpa. Like, what is it? There's got to be a word for it in video game terminology, but like at the beginning of the game, when you select your character and they're just standing there waiting to be selected.
Yeah.
I'm the grandpa character. You pick grandpa. You got the white beard and the sweater, and maybe he's got a pipe and he's wearing a white shirt.
He's probably not wearing a V-neck because you're the only man left who buys V-necks.
That's not true. All my V-neck people out there, hit us up. Tell Stanley where he's wrong. All my V-neck peoples.
I haven't had a V-neck since I picked up some on accident years ago. And
that's on you for not being more with it. V-necks are where it's at.
And then I used them to polish my boots, which will tell you how long ago that was.
Ooh. Don't you remember those back in the day, they were like Michael Jordan commercials where it was all about like the shirt not being all like crumpled up.
Yeah.
Just nasty looking neckline of a shirt. That's why I wear a V-neck. You don't have to worry about it. You don't see the undershirt.
What they call it? Bacon neck?
I don't remember what they called it. Bacon neck doesn't sound right, but it does sound delicious.
Bacon. I mean, we are from the South. That's part of a pig. We probably ate it at some point.
It sounds like something you would have called the fat kid in middle school. What's up, bacon neck?
Yep. Bacon. Yeah. I'm pretty sure there was a bacon neck.
That's what I'm saying. What's up, bacon neck?
So, speaking of preludes.
Okay.
See?
I don't think anybody was speaking of preludes, but maybe we could say after that prelude of an intro, let's get to some conversation. So Stanley sends me a text message. Let me set you up. I'm gonna alley-oop this thing to you here. So Stanley sends me a message. We're talking about, are we recording? Are we not recording? Am I in town? Am I not in town? Spoiler alert, I was in town, so we're recording. And I'm like, sure, let's do this thing. And I was like, I'm at a college thing, but when I get back from the school, we can record. And I'm like, what is our topic? You know, this tells you the extent of our scripting of an episode. Right. Yeah. There you go. Our methodical planning. I said, sure. What's our topic? And he said, Honda Prelude, Japanese mobility show highlights, and UAW strike results. I said, bet, I'm game, let's do it. So yeah, see what I did? That's a callback from a previous episode. And so here we are. And so I have pulled up a lot of information because I'm in grandpa spec. I pulled up a lot of historical data on the Prelude from its origins, only to find out from Stanley before we start recording that he's actually talking about some new Prelude that I have not even heard about or seen or nothing. So Stanley is going to show me a Prelude for the first time that I've not seen, unless it looks identical to one of the previous Preludes, in which case I've seen it. But
you sure you don't want to talk about the history of the Prelude first?
I can do that first if that's how you want to do this thing.
We can build this thing up.
Let's do it.
Starting back in 1978. Go ahead, let's do it.
Whoa, yeah. So we're gonna start back on 24 November 1978 when the Prelude was launched. And just so you know, the Prelude, first ever Honda Accord coupe, because that's really what it was. It was a two-door shortened Honda Accord. Everything else in it was basically identical to a Honda Accord. It just had an unusable back seat.
Right.
Pretty cool. I did try to figure out, and I didn't ever live in Japan. Stanley, did you ever live in Japan? It's been 5 minutes since you told us.
Yes, I've lived in Japan.
I wasn't sure.
I have owned two Honda Preludes. Well, I owned one, and I kind of just drove another third generation Honda Preludes.
Odd flex, but okay. So, can you say Honda Prelude in Japanese? Can you say the Japanese name for Honda Prelude?
No.
Okay, so I'm gonna spell it out for you and see if you can pronounce it. So P-U-R-E-R-Y-U with a line over it, D-O. Now, is that Puriodo?
Well, initially when you said that, because I think I'm on the same page as you because we were talking about history stuff, and I was like, how do you say prelude in Japanese? Because there's no L. And so
interesting.
Preludo.
Okay. Preludo? I won't argue it because I don't know. So when the first generation Prelude came out, it was a very soft launch at just one chain of dealerships in Japan. It was pretty successful. By the time it came to America, it was reviewed by motorists. Brock Yates said, by any sane measurement, a splendid automobile. The machine, like all Hondas, embodies fabrication that is, in his opinion, surpassed only by the narrowest of margins by Mercedes-Benz. It is a relatively powerful little automobile by anybody's standards. They measured its quarter mile time at 18.8 seconds at 70 miles per hour.
Wow. Wow.
That's the second the second generation, which many people in America were far more familiar with, came around in 1982, and the second generation ran till 1987, when the third generation came out, which was a very lightly refreshed version of the second generation. It did away with some of the, and this is a highly contested one, but yes, the third generation, very attractive car. Also the first one to be available with 4WS, which was the rear steering box, giving the vehicle, what do they call it now? What do they call it now? What's the word that Acura and Honda uses now for their
SHAWD.
SHAWD. So 4WS was the predecessor or the precursor to SHAWD. So
wouldn't you call it the Prelude?
What? These things are writing themselves. These puns are writing themselves. I'm wearing the dad sweater and I didn't even come up with a dad joke. Good on you. So it had a rear steering box, which allowed the rear wheels to counter turn, increasing the car's stability and turning speed at which it could negotiate turns. So in 1987, the third generation car performed, it was a 1988 Honda Prelude 2.0 liter SI 4WS, outperformed every car of that year in the slalom for Road and Track magazine, even besting Porsche and Ferrari. To give you an idea, that year, the 1988 Chevrolet C4 Corvette, which we all remember if you're a child of the 80s, the first time you saw a C4 Corvette and its rear tires, you thought, can they make a wider rear tire on a car? It was mind-bogglingly big for a sports car, right? That car did the slalom at 64.9 miles an hour. The Prelude on its skinny little economy car tires did it at 65.5 miles per hour.
Yes. I did not know that. I will tell you, though, my experience with four-wheel steer in a Honda Prelude scared the crap out of me when I first did it. It did not feel right. I thought something was broke. If you've ever driven a car with all-wheel steering, any kind of all-wheel steering system, it just feels a little off at first. But you get used to it because you can do some things in it that you probably shouldn't be doing.
There you go. That's a good way to put it. So the third generation ran all the way to 1991, although there was a mid-cycle refresh in the third generation, but it wasn't enough of a change to be considered a fourth generation. Right. Most significant were slight changes to the face and the big giveaway, if you see them on the road, to distinguish 88 and 89s from 90s and 91s, is the taillights. The top portion of the taillight on the 88 and 89 is red, and the top portion on the 90, 91 is white. Yeah. Then came the fourth generation. In 1991,
that's your favorite,
that came in purple, as Mr. Humphreys can attest. Yep. If you're out there listening to us, that car was, it was a very desirable car for me. That was the car that if I could get a Honda that wasn't a HX Civic, then I would have had a fourth generation Prelude. When I bought my Saturn, I was looking for a Prelude. That's the car I wanted. Mm. Yeah. That came with a 2.2 liter dual overhead cam VTEC four cylinder with either a 4-speed automatic or a 5-speed manual. Also was available with, that was the SI, was the 2.2 liter, sorry. The 2.0 was the base. And that car was also available with 4WS. There are variants from there till the end of the model run that were available with 4WS. Fifth generation came along in 1996, and I really never hated this car. I didn't either. I think in the moment, in the time, I looked at it and I said, I prefer the previous generation more. But as I look back at this car and how well it is aged comparative to the rest of the product line, I think this is the best looking one. I think it still looks like a new car. If you had a very low mile, completely clean white or silver Prelude, and you parked it next to a 5-year-old Honda Civic, there are plenty of people who are not car people who think the cars are the same age.
Yeah, I can see where you're going right there. When this
now,
car
not
came
once
out,
you get inside, but
yeah, no, oh no. This is one of those cars that, like you said, set in a weird area for me where I like the two. I was so used to the two that came before it. Where yes. This one came out, it was, if my memory, it was a little bit bigger. Excuse me.
It was a little bit bigger.
It was a little bigger and it was a little more GT, which I liked. Yep. But
Stanley's a GT man.
Yeah, it was a little more GT. I think the biggest thing that always stood out to me with this car, and actually, I guess you can kind of hit all preludes for this, is so back in the day, you know, when sport compact car was a thing, they had magazines that you actually had to flip pages in.
That's right.
The they used to call the VTEC motor that was in this car the big block VTEC.
That's right.
Because it was the biggest of the VTEC motors.
It was the big VTEC.
And it being a big VTEC, obviously it made more horsepower. But I kind of like the one that I drove in the Integra and the Civic a little more. And also at the same time, the car in that generation, it kind of grew up a little bit and I wasn't grown yet. So
That's a good point.
But I mean, today that would be the one I would go for if I didn't go for because good luck that's driving just, the third generation.
Right, that's right. But you know, and thinking about it too, looking at it with an adult perspective, it also to me, it does a better job of even being a throwback to the third generation because the stylings are very similar, even though it doesn't have pop-ups. Who doesn't love a pop-up? But it got back more square and angular versus that fourth gen's kind of rounded. It just kind of came out of nowhere and was very different when you look at the total life of the product. So I think it's important to note that with the fifth generation, which came out in 96, so Stanley and my wife were graduating high school. I was getting my license, you know. So 96, this car came out. This car had Honda's ATTS, or as we got it in America, the SH system. Now, this was a front-wheel drive car, but this was the system that became the super handling all-wheel drive system that is still being sold by Honda today. They haven't changed much of anything except for making the computer software portion of it better over time. This did the same torque vectoring where it speeds up the outside wheel in a turn and slows down the inside wheel to pull you through the turn quicker. 1996, that came along.
Yep. That's what an SH and super hand, SH AWD.
Yes. Yes. So it transfers 80% of the torque to a single wheel, which can rotate that outside wheel 15% faster. 15% doesn't sound like a lot, but if you can accelerate it versus dragging the inside wheel, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. I remember all the old videos back in the day of like GTIs and Colorados and stuff. And then that wheel would pick up in the middle of a curve.
Oof. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But So yeah, thank you, Bill, for that throwback, that prelude to the prelude.
That's right. Now, before we finish out the end of the lifespan, so 2001, that's all right. 2001, the car kind of came to an end, fifth generation. That was the end of the product run. One that I remember reading about, do you remember when they had the Prelude Motegi, which was a special edition of the fifth gen? Which was named after the twin ring Motegi circuit in Japan.
I do not remember that one.
Okay. So that was in an effort to bring IndyCar series to Japan. But anyway, that was a special edition that was like very limited, hard to find. And I thought I would mention the sales unit numbers because I think this is important. And depending on what you're about to show me, this may factor into my perception of this idea of relaunching it. So first generation, again, that's your Accord coupe before that was a thing. 79 to 82, 171,829 units. Uh-huh. That's not bad numbers for the beginning of a car. Second generation, 83 to 87, 336,599. Biggest sales volume of the product's life.
Third generation. People used to like coupes.
That's right. Third generation, 160,909, just short of 161,000. So pretty significant drop, you know, it's half and then some. Fourth generation, very disappointing numbers, 98,627. But to me, this is the biggest shocker. The car grew up. Maybe the people that bought the second and third generation grew up with it, but they didn't return to buy it in the fifth generation. Only 58,111 units from 97 to 2001. That to me is just, it's astonishing. Like, I really thought that would have been more units than less than 60.
Especially with the frequency at which we saw them. I mean,
that's right. They were very popular in our worlds.
Yeah. I mean, for a car only sell 58,000 units, in that generation, that car was everywhere around us. I mean, that is kind of surprising. I thought it would have sold more than that. But then again, you know, I guess that's why it was replaced by the Honda Accord Coupe.
I guess that's why. But, you know, the Honda Accord Coupe was around at the same time, which maybe that's some of what hurt the Prelude's number, because you could get an Accord Coupe. You could get an Accord Coupe back in the early 90s. There were two-door coupes. There were two-door Accords in the 80s.
Yeah. There were. But I always thought now that I'm thinking about it, the last gen of the Prelude growing up and the Accord Coupe being what the Accord Coupe was, essentially two different takes on the same idea. You know what I mean?
Well, they were kind of GT. They were, but the Accord Coupe was almost the more GT, where the Prelude was more the sport coupe.
Yeah.
Because the Accord you could get with the V6.
Yep, that was the biggest difference.
Yeah, that was the big difference. Anyway, that was my trip down memory lane with the Prelude as a prelude to the new Prelude.
And now your Prelude is done.
Now my Prelude is done. Let's see this new Prelude.
I'm showing Bill this picture. I'm sharing it. Can you see my screen?
Yeah, I can see your screen.
So, first thoughts. Can you still see it?
I can still see it. You got another angle of it? I'm looking at this thing. Photos of the Honda Prelude concept.
We're going to go back.
All right, there's a guy standing beside of it. So it's bigger than it looks, which is a trick. Okay.
All right.
Although he's maybe Japanese, so he may not be as big as my brain tells me a person is. So maybe the car is still small. I'm going to get benefit of the doubt here.
Okay. See that one?
I see it. Flush mounted door handles. Okay. Maybe concept car-y. All right. What else you got? Ooh, straight on. Okay. Maybe not its most favorable view. What else you got? That's okay. Rear. Okay.
Rear again, so you can see it from the top.
Okay. So,
first thoughts. You get it live here. What does Bill think?
Here's my very first gut reaction when I see that is why. Because it doesn't make sense. I'm going to guess that it's some sort of an electric or a hybrid. because how I don't think you're legally allowed to show a concept car anymore that's not got some sort of batteries in it. I don't understand why Honda would do it. They've already built this car and failed at building this car. Do they think people are more receptive to it this time? Because that car has already been a complete failure by another name. And I'm looking, I mean, you just showed me what to me is a slightly refreshed version of the thing that already failed being. Where they already tried to bring back a name from the 80s that people loved and adored as a hybrid and destroyed it. The Honda CRZ. Right? I'm looking up a Honda ZRZ right now.
All right, cool. I was just waiting for the pause. I was waiting for the. I know what CRZ was. Yes, they brought the CRZ back. It was a hybrid. It had a manual.
Did it have a manual?
Yes, you did get a manual. Yes,
a hybrid with a manual.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Wow, a CVT or a six-speed manual. Who were the sad people who chose the CVT?
Yeah, and that was the early days of CVT, so it really did. So,
look, all right, I just pulled this thing up. Look at this. Look.
Uh-huh.
Tell me that's not the same car we just saw with the new body styling. It's the same car, and it failed. Maybe this thing. Oh, I see. There's a manual right there. Look at that. All right, I'm scrolling down now. I want to see if I can find
unit sales.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I want to know how bad it sells. Look, in white, that just looks like the same car. It's got slimmer headlights and a different tail light, and it's the same car.
Mm-hmm.
This is a trick. Oh my goodness. Would you just look at it?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
All right, listeners who aren't just looking at it, sales numbers for the Honda CRZ. Okay, if you want to know where this Prelude's going.
In 2010, it sold 52,049 units.
11,333. 5,249 units.
Oh, my eyes. Oh, that is kind of low. I apologize.
5,249. 11,000. Best year for the machine at
4,112. 4,513. 3,514. 3,015. 2,316. 717 and 38 and 18.
38 cars in 2018 when people were buying hybrids. Are you kidding me? Okay, so that's my gut. My gut is you have brought back a car that you thought should have sold more, and you already have all of the manufacturing in place for it. But because CRZ didn't work, you're going to try dragging another old name that people like through the dirt, hoping that it'll convince people to buy it since they wouldn't buy the CRZ. That's my instant reaction hot take. What do you think about it, Stanley?
Cool. I was waiting for your instant reaction hot take.
In a week, I may completely change my mind about it, but right now, that's what I see.
Oh, of course. Next week, I'll probably have.
I need to look at it. I need to look at it three or four times and read something about it.
Yeah. All right. So, the car that they showed that they had at the show, initially there wasn't a whole lot about the powertrain, and of course, it's going to have some kind of battery propulsion in it. But towards the end of the show, I believe they said it. The car that you saw there was very close to production, the production car.
Wow.
My initial take was, people don't buy coupes. That's why you got rid of the Civic Coupe, essentially. Then I thought about it again. It's like, oh, you got rid of the Civic Coupe so you can do this. This is, and then my other take was, the Prelude has always kind of shared a lot of parts with the Accord.
Yep.
All right, so I see how you differentiate this from the Civic. And it's like, how you really could do it if you bring back the manual on that the hybrid motor that the Accord has right now. It's like, huh, this ain't going to sell a lot, but it's going to be interesting.
It is interesting because maybe it does point to something that's coming. I have spent a lot of time at Honda dealerships. I've spent some time at a Honda dealership or two in the last couple of weeks. And
I just saw one your of the face. Things, you want to tell me something?
One of the things that I learned is that Honda is already killing the new Accord because the sales numbers are atrocious. They can't move them. They're ugly, and the only people that want them are senior adults.
I'm kind of surprised at that because I see a lot of them on the road down here.
They have already decided there will be a complete model refresh next year with a complete facelift.
The car that they came out with, I thought it was a half effort anyway, but because it is a lot of the old Accord before that.
So what I was told, that
was kind of refreshed.
Yeah. So what I was told was that dealers were informed that Honda's benchmark for the Accord in styling was the Audi A6, and they were trying to copy the styling of the Audi A6. But because the Audi is an all-wheel drive car, how its chassis carries the body lines, the end result looks a lot different. And so their attempt at those same kinds of body lines with where the powertrain lives, it did not translate as well as they thought it would. And in their numbers, their sales numbers have not been as good as they had hoped. So they are going to remodel. The Civic is outselling the Accord like 9 or 10 to 1 right now.
Well, that's been the case for a while now. But
maybe not from a styling standpoint.
Yeah. Well, I hear what you're saying, and my initial take on what you're saying is, I understand what that dealer said, and I've talked to many car dealers who tell me things that try to convince me of things that I know are not true, but. it could be that that car isn't selling well. Sedans and whole aren't really selling that well, even though I think they're starting to make a comeback here.
I do too.
I kind of, from what you're saying, it's like if you're looking at the Audi A6, then where did I put the TLX?
Yeah, I don't know.
But then again,
not if you're trying to compete with them, but if you're trying to be styled like them, if you want your car to look, not compete with, just look like.
Well, in all reality, I mean, I can see where you're coming from. A change of styling up, that might help them a little bit. Kind of take the Korean model where every 2 years the car looks different.
Yeah. Like completely different. Like, oh, can't come out with something new. Oh no, that's just a new Forte.
Yeah. Same car. They just changed the front end a little bit, so you can go get the new one now. So you can come get the new one now. But I mean, if it's not selling well, Honda is one of those companies that has proven that eventually they will hear their customer and they will make changes. You know,
right?
Civic. When the Civic came out with the head unit with no buttons on it, with no knobs on it, they changed that, you know, in 18 months. I wish Volkswagen would hear that, but, you know.
Yeah, Volkswagen's got to figure out this haptic feedback, no buttons garbage.
And I understand why they do it, because it makes things cheaper, but sometimes making things cheaper is not the way to go. Which is going to be another thing that we're going to talk about towards the end of the podcast. Right. But back to the Prelude. So I tried to make the sales case or the business case for this car. And if you're, there aren't a whole lot of coupes out there. Coupes have been ticking up in sales here lately. Manuals have been ticking up in sales here lately. You know, take the same ideas that what the Prelude initially was. Shorten the wheelbase on the Accord. Use the powertrain from the Accord. Put a manual on it. Tighten up the steering, and you can have an interesting car. I don't think it's gonna sell much, but I don't think it's gonna sell that much. But if they come out with a plan, if they come to market with that car, knowing it's kind of like remember when the FRS and all that stuff first came to the market,
yes.
It was like, all right, cool. We know this car isn't gonna sell, have Honda Civic numbers. But we're gonna use what we have. We're gonna make an interesting car. We're gonna see how it goes, and I can see that kind of car that car picking up a little bit of steam now. It's not gonna ever sell as much as a Civic. So if that's what they're hoping for, that ain't gonna work, and then it'd be gone in one generation. But I think it will be kind of interesting with a 6-speed on that hybrid powertrain, because the hybrid powertrain really isn't. It's not slow.
But what's the over-under on it actually getting a manual? What do you think?
To be honest,
more than 10%? Because I feel like it's got to be less than 10% chance they actually build it with a manual.
Well, seeing how they build, I hope it gets a manual. If it does not get a manual, then they shouldn't do it.
Well, I mean, I agree. I also hope it gets a manual. Heck, I hope everything gets a manual. But
the Honda Accord had a manual in this last generation. So, I mean.
But they took it away. That's what I'm saying. Like, if they, to me, that was a huge mistake. I mean, I think if they had a manual transmission, they might could actually still be selling some of those Accords.
I think I'm with you that, but I mean. Manuals are a niche market. I mean,
they are. They are.
But the people who want them, they want them.
That's right.
Now that I'm thinking about it, they can kind of go by the route of like, you know, this is an order car. This isn't something that's going to be built sitting on the lot. You order it, we build it, we get it to you. You know. To be honest, that is more of a European and Japanese model that Americans aren't really used to. But I kind of feel like it works better.
We might need a little more of that. I feel like, I don't know, you know, some of the supply chain stuff has maybe pushed us in that direction. And maybe so has this strike. Speaking of this strike, what do you got on that?
Yeah. Oh, cool. So
that was a segue.
So. The prelude to the strike is, I had to try one more time.
Good for you.
Yeah, so that was the prelude. But Bill asked a question last time we were speaking, and I'm talking, and he was like, hey, man, what are we going to talk about the strike? And I was like, I don't know yet. Let's kind of see how it plays out, and we kind of agreed to kind of hold off, which was a good call, because now we're back over here, and the strike is evidently over.
Stanley's exact response was, we're not going to get political. That was Stanley's exact response. Because he thought we're not going to make it political. But I wasn't trying to make it political. I just wanted to talk about the strike.
We are going to make it political off the air, probably.
Maybe. Maybe not. You never know.
Maybe. So your question was, how do I think this is going to affect car prices?
Yes.
And you essentially said my answer when we started talking right before we started recording is, it is going to be used as an excuse
100%
to raise car prices. Does it have to raise car prices? No. Because if you looked at the numbers that Ford and GM and Stellantis did, they're still multi-billion dollars in profit. So,
okay, so my question about that really becomes two part. I agree. I think, and that's why I asked it, I think there are going to be some efforts made to use it as a crutch or an excuse to justify raising the prices of some new car models, particularly those new car models that are most desirable.
Mm-hmm.
However, given the fact that currently interest rates for new car loans are ridiculous.
All car loans
are ridiculous. Having another reason to make the car harder to buy is only going to hurt manufacturers and dealerships. Yeah, because they're going to have more trouble putting people in cars, especially those people who are most susceptible being the people that have the worst credit. Because you've overpriced them on a car, and you've out payment priced them on a car.
Yeah, I agree, and that's been a thing that we've talked about before. That's similar to a conversation we've had before about obviously you work for a business, I work for a business, so all business ain't big business, and all business ain't bad.
That's right.
Some businesses actually provide the product that the customer needs at a reasonable price. To work with customers who need the product but might not be able to afford it, you know.
Well said.
But the automotive industry has been, for lack of not cussing, has been pissing me off in the last 3 to 4 years. Dealerships have completely lost their mind. They are pricing themselves out of the agro market. And if manufacturers, which have given, manufacturers, the idea is like, well, we're not going to let the dealers make all this money, so we're going to raise the MSRP.
Yes.
So, because if I remember correctly, you're going to correct me because we correct each other all the time. You know, those cars on the lot, they are already paid for.
Yes. In most instances, those cars are already bought by the dealership.
Yes. Yes. And so,
which is why end of month and end of year, there's always a push to move units because that affects their taxes.
Absolutely.
Every month that those things carry over, it affects their profits and loss statement. And that's going to affect their taxes, because when, especially a bigger dealership that carries huge inventories of both automobiles and parts, they need to show sales on those items and not show sitting inventories.
Correct.
So yeah, 100%, because they're just trying to tie up their liquid assets and not have everything just be sitting stagnant on a lot.
So my opinion has been that eventually manufacturers were not going to sit there and allow dealerships to make $7,000, $10,000, $20,000 marking vehicles up, knowing that some of our brothers and sisters were out here eager enough to go jump in those car loans and things like that, and not try to take back some of that money.
Right.
We've seen the prices of some EVs, because that's been on the news a lot this year, fluctuate, going up and down and all this moving around and stuff. So I think that trend is going to continue while they essentially try to figure out how much more money they can make off of each individual car. And not from a dealership standpoint, from the manufacturing standpoint. But the other side of that strike is, it's a balance.
Right.
I personally believe that pay doesn't increase at the correct rate. And
agree.
So Henry Ford taught us a lesson 100+ years ago. If the person who is building the car can't afford to buy the car, then what are we doing this for?
So it's funny you bring up Henry Ford. So I recently, the last three books that I've read have been autobiographies.
Okay.
I started with Henry Ford a couple weeks ago, and then Nikola Tesla, and I'm a couple chapters away from wrapping up the third of my autobiography reads, and that's Benjamin Franklin. So
before you go further, I want to look at your face. Can you look at me? I am proud of you.
Really? Oh, thanks, yes. Bud.
I'm proud of you. Because I definitely wouldn't have read them books. I would have got them on audio and I would have listened.
Oh. Well, you take back your proud moment, because I 100% downloaded them on audio and listened to them. I'm in a car driving, so I can't be reading actual books.
Okay, cool. So
this is not, right, this is not 1853. Look, don't let me put out like a incorrect perception of who I am. 100% listening to these books.
I thought your wife had finally influenced you.
No, look, I actually do like reading actual books. I just never have time to sit down and do it.
Same.
It's going to be an audio book if I'm going to get it done. And, I usually average 50 to 60 books in a year, but I have to do it on audio. That's just the only way I'm going to get it done. Yeah. So anyway, all that being said, so listened to Henry Ford first, listened to Nikola Tesla second, and then I'm currently listening to Benjamin Franklin. And one of the things I learned and took away from, there was a lot of good stuff in Henry Ford's, mm-hmm. especially for somebody like me whose career is in the manufacturing space. There's a lot of good takeaway insights in manufacturing from Henry Ford, who, by the way, said that there's not a foreseeable future where we make an electric car that is affordable and good. By the way, that's Henry Ford said that. He also said he would much rather sell a large quantity of cheap cars that people could afford than to sell few cars that are so expensive only a few could afford them. And I thought that was funny, because we had recently talked about the amount of profit in one Ferrari versus however many Fords it was that they have to sell to be equal. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty funny that, you know, he basically said exactly that in his book. Like, he's aware of that and doesn't want to be that. You know what I mean? So anyway, thought that was pretty fascinating.
In my opinion, there's space in the automotive market for both things.
100%. There's justification. It's a use case, right? I mean, there is definitely a use case for a person to own a Ferrari if they have the means to do it.
Yes, 100%.
I was going to contrast
your statement a little bit.
Right.
I think I got a clever one.
So what I was going to say was, I think the issue that Ford is experiencing right now, because they're seeing huge losses on EVs, and they're not the only one. I mean, Tesla just reported like a $38 billion loss in the third quarter, some ridiculous number. So
I thought they were up.
No, anyway. Look at their third quarter earnings statement. They are down big time.
Okay.
Not to say I wasn't prophetic and said that it was coming, but I did say it was coming. So anyway, the reality of it is, it's exactly what you said. You can't price people out of the vehicles. The people who want the vehicles have to be able to afford the vehicles, or who are you building them for?
Right.
And when you talk about Ford selling F-150 Lightnings, and every month they're jacking the price up more, and Chevy, they've delayed the truck now a year, right? It's not even going to come out for a whole nother year. So we had all this conversation about this Silverado EV that was going to be this game changer.
Yep.
But they realize the demand's not there. Nobody wants the thing.
There's another realization in there, but we'll get to
that. Well, yes. But so if you have to keep raising the price and the performance isn't there and people aren't stupid, they can read the data and go, well, this thing doesn't tow worth a crap. Why would I have a truck that can't tow anything? And so they don't buy it. Well, raising the price doesn't help you any because you're not in that space that's the Ferrari where you only have to sell a few because your profit margins are so high, right? Uh-huh. You're the market you're in as a Ford, as Ford Motor Company, is to sell a bunch of cheap cars.
Yeah.
But you're trying to sell, few expensive trucks, but not so expensive that you can survive off the profits, right? Instead, you're taking a $35,000 loss on every truck. So from a marketing standpoint, if you had said, we have this F-150 Lightning coming out, it's revolutionary, we've done our research, it's got everything right, it's got the range, it's got towing, it's got all the things you love about an F-150, but it's next generation, space age, all electric, goes 600 miles on a charge and takes 20 minutes to recharge from 0 to 80%, right? And oh, by the way, it's $275,000. You'd have probably sold almost the same number that you sold of it at its current price. But your profit margin would have been, you would have made money off of each sale.
I think I understand your point. Is I think it was a story that I remember hearing a story back during the days of Locked In about Arizona tea, and the guy telling them, it's like, we're not going to raise the price. The tea costs 99 cents. That's how much it costs. That's how much it costs then. That's how much it costs now. That's how much we're going to sell it for. We're not raising the price,
right?
And then refusing to distribute tea to stores that were trying to sell it, for more. I kind of disagree with you a little bit, but I understand your point, and I do agree with you. I think your overall point is, if they would have treated the F-150 Lightning like a Ferrari,
yes,
then you could have saw more off of it. I think there's
market
a bigger point.
As a Ferrari. Yeah. Sell it at a Ferrari price tag.
Yeah. I can see, I get your point there. But I personally believe that the problem is even bigger than that. I know you drive around and look, you drive around everywhere. I see a very large amount of trucks sitting on all dealership lots.
Yeah.
And the bigger problem is these trucks start at, to get a decent version of it, are like $50,000 plus $60,000 to $100,000 plus. At that point, who are you making this for?
Okay, so this is the other half of my comment, because I think what you're saying tees it up perfectly. So because you tried to sell this F-150 Lightning or this Mach-E or whatever vehicle you want to insert in there, and we're kind of beating up on Ford, but it could be said of a lot of brands right now. So because you're trying to sell these vehicles at a very inflated price, but you're rushing through a lot of R&D engineering costs and trying to wrap those up in these inflated costs, but the quality's not there to back it up, and you're not going so high on the price that you're making a profit, but you're going high enough that people don't want to pay for it. And at the same time you did all of those things that we're complaining and talking about, you made a completely separate but equally damaging problem that could have kept you afloat. You took away cheap cars.
Yeah. Yep.
That's the big problem. Look at Toyota. I guarantee you a Highlander hybrid or a Sienna hybrid, I bet the profit margin on either one of those, because of all the R&D and the engineering and the manufacturing cost involved in that hybrid drivetrain are higher, the profit margin on those vehicles is less. Right? They make less money on them. But Toyota don't give a flip because they're still selling 35,000 Toyota Corollas every month at pennies on the dollar, and they're making 48% margin on every single unit that rolls out the door. By the time they finance it, they put a bunch of dealer installed options on it. Everybody's making a ton of money off those cheap cars, and that's propping up their less successful models with smaller margins. Ford and Chevy killed that option. They said, nobody really wants to buy these little cars anymore, so we're going to just kill them. But they're just gone. Yeah.
Which this actually segues into another topic.
So you cut your feet out from under you. The one thing that could have kept your bad decisions afloat was a worse decision.
Yeah. So this segue, what you just said, segues into the topic that I don't know if I really... it wasn't in the text. This is, and I wanted to bring this up. I didn't know we were going to get there, but it makes sense now. I watched a mini documentary slash thing about General Motors. And, you know, I pay a lot of attention to movies and shaking in the automotive industries as much as I pay to about cars.
Right. Yeah, you are by far the industry expert of the two of us.
Yeah. So there was an idea was floated, and I didn't completely agree with this guy's whole take, but he brought out some illuminating things. And the illuminating thing is, one of the illuminating things was, General Motors is making a whole lot of decisions the same way they made decisions in 2007.
100% they are.
So, and not for, when I say a lot of decisions, what I specifically mean is they are paying back shareholders now with money in the same way that they did the last time they went bankrupt.
Yes.
Now, you combine that with their failed attempt to bring EVs to the market. And the reason why they failed is because they thought that's like, we know how to build cars. We don't need to listen to you. We don't need to pay attention. We're going to do it the way that we do it because we're General Motors, which
that's
has
right.
always gotten General Motors in issues. So now they're trying to bring to the market, like you just said, the El Silverado EV. The tech in that car that they spent so much money developing is old now.
It's old. And so if you delay it by a year, when you go to bring it to market, you got an R&D, all new technology to go in it because the stuff that's in it ain't going to be what people want anymore.
So this is the problem. The problem with what they've done is, and remember, I think we talked about this when we were talking about what was going to be the better thing, the Lightning or the Silverado. And I said the Silverado is probably going to be better until Ford comes out with a second generation Lightning. Right. And I still kind of believe that a little bit because they started off with a ground up EV platform. But the thing that I did not take into account of was the battery tech that they're using is out of date.
Yes.
And so they put all this money into it and it's not going to have it's not going to be long in the tooth, which makes me reassess some of the things I've said sometimes about Tesla. The cars on the outside hardly ever change, but the things underneath the cars changed a lot over the years.
Which is why it comes back to the statement that I've always said, and we've both said, is that Tesla is not an automotive manufacturer. They are a technology manufacturer. Yeah. They are basically selling you with a bicycle with better and better pedals every year. That's all they're doing.
They're doing the iPhone thing.
That's right.
The iPhone looks the same every year. The internals change a little bit.
And the overall performance doesn't generally change, really.
Yeah. The tech underneath changes. It updates. They figure out ways to do it cheaper next year. They figure out ways to do it better. But it's the whole point of it is General Motors attacked this problem with an old school model. And I believe that
it was the wrong motto.
Yeah. We talked about that before, too. I always thought, I believe personally that there's room in the market for EVs, hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and ICE vehicles and diesels, all of them. Let the consumer choose the one they want. However, there's only so many early adopters. And if you move your whole model to this, that one thing all at the same time, then you're just going to close people out of the market. You're going to take people out of the market.
And that's exactly what Toyota has said all along.
Yeah, Toyota has said it all along.
Like, Toyota has said that forcing the technology on people through legislation is the one sure way to guarantee that it fails.
I remember us disagreeing on about legislation, but we ain't gonna get in that. But anyway, I think Toyota had it right. Toyota had it right. It's like, look, we will let everybody else make all the mistakes while we build hybrids and four cylinder things and the same V6 that we have built for the last 30 years. When this thing gets to the point where it works. We'll get some of that. We'll get in there a little bit. But until that, we're not putting all that money in there.
It's not worth it. Yeah. Let's see where the industry actually goes and not put all our eggs in one basket.
Yep. So I guess the ultimate question is, will we bail GM out this time?
Yeah. Because we've already set the precedent. That's the problem. Yeah. So we'll do it again. And it's just as wrong this time as it was in 2008.
Yep. I wholeheartedly agree with you.
They should have been allowed to go bankrupt in 2008. Yep. They would have been bought up by somebody smarter. Yep. And the cars would have still kept coming out. And GMs would have still been on lots. And they'd have still been for sale. They would have just had a better business plan.
So this is because I agree with you that they're going to get some level of bailout. I don't think GM lasts the way it continues to be the thing it does. It has been. I think this is finally the death. We are on the precipice of finally the death of GM, the old GM, General Motors.
So you could probably go so far as to say the issues with EV sales and low returns and low initial interest in EVs from the big three of America are a prelude to the death of the old way of doing business, is what you're telling me. It's what I'm hearing you say.
I not as many words, but yes, I agree 90% of your, you snuck one in there. Oh man, you got me.
That's what I do.
But yeah, man. But the thing is, it's not just General Motors.
It's not just General Motors, right? And normally we like to beat up on GM, and I'm definitely saying for sure this is not a GM specific problem. This is not a Ford specific problem. This is a problem of companies that are not. They're not forward thinking with a mindset that there could be another option.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
That's the thing that hurt GM so much in the '80s. It's like, well, we see Toyota, we see Honda, we see all them other things, but they ain't gonna, our customers buy the Chevys.
Right. They don't want to buy those. Our customers will never want to buy one of those.
Yep.
Well, guess what? They did, and they bought one real quick. In fact, they bought their fifth one real quick.
Yep. And what they didn't buy is another Chevy Cavalier or right. another rebashed Pontiac or another rebashed Oldsmobile. I mean, it ain't the same thing, but it sure rhymes, man.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, so I'll give it 18 months max, and I think GM will be right back in the same place. And I think Ford has learned a lesson, even though I think they learned it the hard way. I don't know what exactly they're going to do to get out of it, but they didn't. And what the lesson I'm talking about is, they didn't fully invest everything into the EV future like General Motors did.
Right. Right.
But they did invest a lot.
In fact, they invested a lot, but they didn't invest it in the right places too. That's the other thing, is if both Ford and GM had spent more money, and listen, I'm not advocating for the current dealer network system by any means. I'm not advocating for it. I'm not saying it's the right system, because it's not. It's a bad system. But if they had invested more heavily in that to prepare the way for EVs, they would be more successful right now than they currently are right now. Does that mean that it would have been ultimately successful? I don't know. I don't think so, because, again, I don't think an all-battery future is the best future. Yeah, I think a mixed future is the best future.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think it's got to all be one thing or all another thing. Like, I love a nice engine, but I agree that not every single thing going up and down the road for the next 1,000 years should always be an ICE engine. I would never make that statement. But I also would never make the statement. I'm ready to get to them engines
that they got in the Millennium Falcon. I want one.
There you go. But I'm also willing to say that all electric vehicles running up and down the road is the only path to the future. Because it's not. It can't be. We can't sustain battery production for that long.
Ooh, I just thought about it. This is the mistake that was made. And this probably is a half-baked idea, but it just came to my head, so I'm going to say it. You remember back when Tesla was first starting up and they went to the big three and they asked for help and everybody shunned them?
Yep.
That was the mistake.
Well, yeah, because if somebody would have bought them up then and invested in their technology, how we received the technology would have looked a lot different than it does now.
Yeah, so they essentially could have been, you know how we have all our fantasy, all our fever dreams, and I was like, man, I wish they would bring back Oldsmobile. And when I say this thing, I don't mean they should bring back Oldsmobile to add in with the rest of the EV lineup, well, with a full EV lineup. But if they would have did one division, a Saturn, Oldsmobile, not Buick, because Buick was doing other things, but would have made that a thing, the new Mercury, whatever, you know, and let that tech mature, and, you know, still build Escorts and Cavaliers and stuff for, you know, kids graduating high school they can go buy, like we did when we, you know.
What does a kid graduating high school buy right now that's new?
Their parents' car.
Right. That's not new.
That's the only option. My son has to go buy a car, has to get a car in the next couple of weeks because he just got back from Germany. And he is going to overspend. I'm going to try my best. But it's inevitable. He's going to overspend, but he's in a situation where his wife is a nurse. She works. He's in the military. He works. They're going to multiple directions at the same time.
They have to have two cars.
They got to have two cars. So
they're going to overspend.
Because that's what the market is. The whole market is, hey, you come in here, we're going to try to get you on everything, for everything. And I think this is going to be, I'm going to try to make this my last point on this part of our conversation is, I went to the Kia dealership because, you know, I like my Korean car companies, and because I thought they, I believe they made a pretty good product. I believe they make a pretty good product, and you know, I didn't always have Tony Yoda money, so I had to go do some other things.
Okay, low blow, but I'll let it slide.
Hey, if I could afford a camera back when I got my first Optima, I would have got a camera, but I couldn't.
Makes sense.
Man, do you know they still got a $7,500 market adjustment on Palace on Telluride?
That's stupid. There's no need for it. There's no reason for it.
At the same time that they have 10 of them sitting there.
But here's the thing. Dealerships are, they currently have a very fragile facade and they know it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I stopped by the dealership. I stopped by this Honda dealership on Tuesday. Yeah. Monday, because Tuesday was the last day of the month. On Monday, I stopped by this dealership and six sales guys standing outside the front sidewalk. Not talking to nobody. A row of brand new Civics, two rows of brand new Accords, a row of brand new CRVs and Pilots and Passports, and a few scattered little sprinklings of pickup trucks, whatever those are. What are the Ridgelines, right? And yeah. I get out of my truck and I was like, whew, end of the month, you guys look hungry. They didn't appreciate my humor.
They don't appreciate mine nowadays either.
So start having some conversations with this salesperson about this vehicle. So we test drive a vehicle that they got in. So that's why I went by. They let me know they got it in. So I go test drive this vehicle and come back. He's trying to get me to, he's ready to sign. Look, let's get it done. I'm like, nah, we ain't getting anything done today, but I appreciate your enthusiasm. We'll be in touch. So he texts me first thing in the morning, the next day, which is the last day of the month, which was a mistake on his part because last day of the month is crazy. And I said, nah, bruh, it's not a good day. It's the last day of the month. I'm going to be crazy busy. You're not selling me that car today. I said, but I appreciate you reaching out to me. I just need to go ahead and let you know, you know, you sent me home with that paper you wanted me to sign and it had all the prices on it. I said, whether this car sells before I buy one or I buy this one or I buy one that's 26 from now in your inventory, whatever the case is, you got two options. You can take $375 worth of junk off my car and knock $1,000 off the price, or you can just give me all that junk for free, but I will not buy your dealership's plastic garbage attached to my car for $1,000. Just not going to do it. Instantly messaged back, no problem, I'll take $1,000 off. Like within 30 seconds, no problem. Not going to charge you for any of it. Now, of course, what he doesn't realize is that immediately opened the door for us to move to the next phase of negotiation where we move into our marketing conversation. Because I haven't calculated recently what the marketing value is of me advertising their dealership in perpetuity. But once I figure that out, and depreciate that over the lifespan that I'll own the car and the number of miles I'm likely to put on it, they're not going to be able to afford the number that I throw at them in a form of a discount for me leaving their license plate cover and their stickers on the back of the car. So those will have to come off, right? Because that's my next phase of my negotiation is that's anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 worth of discount depending on the price of the vehicle. I will not drive around in a brand new car freely advertising for your dealership without any return on that. I will never buy a used or new car without having that conversation.
At top first three things I do in a vehicle I buy.
What's that? Take it off?
Yep. Or they have them take it off.
Yeah, make the dealership take it off. I'm doing the work for you.
But
it's at Walmart. I'm not checking out myself.
I don't think you've been in a Walmart. I think we've been in a Walmart the last time. I ain't been in it in a minute. Anyway.
2005, baby. 2005. Last time I bought stuff in a Walmart.
You got me beat.
February 2005. And that's because I got a gift card from work Christmas 2004. And I sat on it for 2 months thinking, do I just give this away or do I use it? And I used it. I bought a DVD, like Bourne movie or something. I don't know what I bought. Bought a DVD to come out in February. And then I bought one other thing. It was like $49.78. It was a $50 gift card. Went and picked it up. I bought it online back then. Went and picked it up. Walked in, got it, paid with my gift card. Threw it away and walked out. Last time I shopped at a Walmart with my own money. 2005.
So. Seeing how you were just talking about something fun, I got a fun story for you.
Let's hear it.
Right. Well, so remember I told you we got the kid that is going to get married, and I think I'm going to end on this. And he wanted to get a different car, and I tried to convince him that the cheapest car you're going to have, brother, is the car that you already got.
Yep.
All right, so I think he's on board with that, so he's going to keep the car. But in the middle of that, he was looking at Civics, and then he decided to go around because I gave him a list of cars that you could all get with a manual. And so he ends up at the Toyota dealership, and he was looking for a manual Corolla to see if they had one. So the dude tell him, hey, man, we don't have a manual Corolla on the lot right now, but I got a manual Corolla coming in.
GR.
And I don't know if you ever heard of this, but it's a GR Corolla. And he's like, no, I don't really know much about it. Terry's like, yeah. He showed him the specs and told him what color it's going to be and all of that stuff. Dude's like, hey, I'll sell you this car for $38,000.
That's what they're all going for. I can go online right now. You can go on cars.com and there's 50 GR Corollas in the country for sale and they're all exactly $38,000.
All right. So he comes back to work and he tells me, that's like, yeah, that sounds about right. That's how much that car should cost. But and he's like, I don't know if I want that though. It's like, I really, really like the Civic. I was like, well, what did they tell you about a Civic? They wanted to tell him a Civic Sport for $34,000. I was like, brother, this is what
you got a serious problem. You got a serious problem. Like, that's not good. I mean, the car I looked at and the car I test drove was a SI.
Uh-huh.
And after my 32nd round one negotiation, so when they handed me the paperwork to sign with tax title, tags, fees, bull crap, all wanting, you know, ready to go pricing at almost $37,000. Mm. And I was like, nah.
Ain't gonna happen.
Nah. I will give you out the door 30, or I will wait and order one and get it when it comes in, but I will not pay all your adjusted. I'm just not gonna do it. So there is power in being the purchaser.
Yes. Yeah. So he's like, in his moment, he's like, so what should I do? I was like, if it's me, I would rather pay $38,000 for a GR Corolla than for a Civic SI.
You know,
$34,000 for a SI, not a SI, for a Sport.
Yeah. 100%. But here's the thing that's hurting the GR Corolla. The thing hurting the GR Corolla in the American market is Americans don't understand what a three-cylinder is. That's what's hurting the American market. If they knew how many cars actually had three-cylinder engines right now, then they would be more receptive to it.
I think you have a point there.
I think there is a stigma to a three-cylinder in the States, and people are shying away from the GR Corolla. Even enthusiasts are shying away because they hear three-cylinder and think, yeah, I don't know. Three-cylinders is like when my four-cylinder is not running right.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you there. I think that's some of it. But again, Toyota did a slick thing. They didn't intend to sell a billion or half different units of that car. It's like, hey man, we're gonna sell. I think it was 15,000.
It was somebody. It wasn't stupid. I mean, that's all I got to say. Like they knew what they was doing.
But like, we're gonna make 15,000 though. One of them come get them.
I'm telling you, they are all exactly. There's no markup on them. They're exactly every single one of them's $38,000. No Toyota dealership is trying to weasel an extra $500 here or there out of a GR Corolla. They're just not doing it.
The crazy thing is, the last time I was at a Toyota dealership is they still had a little bit. Well, the ones here, one of the Toyota dealerships here, they still have markups on cars. On regular Corollas, but they didn't have. I don't know if you went to that same Toyota dealership. Now I think about it, I was like, wait a minute. The last time I've been, they marked up a regular Corolla SE Nightshade, but they're not marking up the GR.
So Something ain't right. Well, let's talk about one more thing that I have observed in recent weeks of looking at things. I have been to two different places to test drive two different vehicles with manuals where I had to be the one to remove the car from its parking place and drive it off the lot because the salesman did not know how to operate a manual transmission.
I love it.
And at some point during the test drive, they went, whoa, this is awesome.
We knew this the whole time. But yeah, man. Final bill thought for a young man who wants a relatively new car.
Yep.
And his budget is $25,000.
Yep.
Self-imposed budget is $25,000.
Yep.
You got two suggestions off the top of your head. Go.
And he wants a manual.
No, this is my son. He can't drive a manual because he's just not getting a driver's license.
And his budget's $25,000. It needs to be a family car or just a commuter car?
Either.
Either family car or commuter car.
He ain't going to get rid of it for a while because he's cheap. Well, okay. He's frugal.
Yeah, I know his dad. I mean, a used Honda Accord, I don't think there's a better value for the dollar. Or if he's looking at something more new, then probably make dad proud with a Kia or a Hyundai.
I need you to speak on that a little more because I'm going to show you one of the considerations. All right, so if you had to say a third car, what would you do?
I don't know. It might be a while before I get to the one you've already told him. So why don't you just show me?
I didn't tell him this.
Oh, is this the one he picked?
It so happened to show up at a place that I did not think it was going to show up at. So.
On base repo?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
No, not on base repo.
I mean, so when you say it showed up somewhere, I'm like, well, is it drunk lot or?
It popped up on a lot that I didn't expect it to.
Can you see that? There you go. There's make daddy proud.
Because he wants an Arteon, but he knows he can't afford an Arteon.
Well, that's the KDM version of an Arteon.
Yep.
And
see that?
But here's the thing. It's rear wheel drive.
Yeah.
And y'all do get rain and stuff. And given the number of wrecks I've heard about in your family, because apparently your kids didn't get driving lessons.
First of all,
Is rear wheel drive the safest bet?
He just came home from Germany.
Okay, so he got that Autobahn experience.
He just came home from Germany. This will be his first car, and he's probably the most responsible of all four of the kids.
Based on my experience, I would say that's probably a safe bet.
And his wife's a nurse, so when he breaks himself, she can put him back together.
Oh, okay. That's how that works. I didn't realize you could do that. I clearly have made a mistake.
No, your wife puts you back together. Yeah, absolutely. She took what was there, transformed it into the build that we know.
I don't know how to break this to you, Stanley, but that's every woman's plan for their husband.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. 100%. But yeah, I was surprised. Oh, I'm sorry. We didn't even say what it was. It was a 2018 Kia Stinger 2.0T with 50,000 miles on it, and it won $23,000 for it.
And an automatic transmission.
Yeah. He doesn't know how to drive. He doesn't know how to drive a manual. I failed my children that way.
But you could get that car in a manual.
No. Are you kidding?
You couldn't get a Stinger in a manual?
No, you can get a G7 in a manual.
Oh. I thought you could get a Stinger with a manual. My respect for the Stinger just went way down. I don't know why. I always thought you could get that car with a manual.
Now, you know, a man of your ilk, you know, you could manualize it. You could.
Nah, that's not worth it.
I mean, the parts already exist. They are in the G70.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you're still driving around in a Kia, so it's just not worth it.
Don't worry, I'm gonna get you over here. You're gonna be one. I'm gonna get you in a Kia. See you in a Kia.
That day is a long time coming, brother.
Oh.
I think your best bet is going to be if you sneak into the nursing home while I'm unconscious and you put a Kia badge on the back of my wheelchair. And then the next day when I come out of the room and you're sitting over there snickering, peeing on yourself, then you'll be like, I got you in a Kia. And I'd be like, I don't want to play dominoes. And you'd be like, that's not what I said. That'll be the conversation that happens. I'm just saying.
Back in the day, I remember a bill that was all about Volkswagen and Subaru, and they didn't even look at Toyotas.
Yep, that's true. Unless it was a Supra.
Yeah, which we could not afford.
Which we still cannot.
Cannot afford. Well, on that note, I think that's us.
On that note, I love you, brother. Let's do this again.
I love you too, man. Yo and family, have fun on your travels next week. Next week is my birthday. I cannot remember how old I'm going to be next week, but it's my birthday.
46. Yes.
No, I'm not. I am 1 year older than the lovely Miss Lady. I was born in 1947, yes, I think. Am I going to be 47? Yeah. One of them numbers.
Because she's going to be 46.
I mean, 1 year away from greatness. 1 year away from greatness. You'll catch up with her.
I won't. I won't catch up. I will always be young and behind, and I'm okay with that.
I don't think you are. But I am going to buy you a kid when I hit the lotto. Got you.
Mm.
Doing it.
I'll just trade it in on something else that works for me.
No, I'm letting you know. All right, this is really is the last thing. When I hit the lotto, this is how it's going to go.
Okay, I can't wait to hear this.
We're going to do that challenge that we've always talked about. I'm going to buy a car. I'm going to get a car. And you got to drive us for 6 months. And you're going to get a car. And I got to drive for 6 months. And you can't destroy it because Bill. And just like I'm not going to destroy your car. And we're going to be okay. You're going to live through it.
Oh, I'll live through it. I can drive anything with wheels. I mean, I won't like it, but I can drive anything with wheels. You, on the other hand, Mr. fresh out the box lotto winner with more money than sense is going to lose his ever loving mind when he can't figure out how to stick a subwoofer in the back of a smart car. Cause you absolutely will be driving a smart car. Figure that out.
See, your playing doesn't sound so good now, does it? These are the parts of you that I don't like. See, I wasn't going to do something evil to you.
You just said you were going to make me drive a Kia. Listen, in the world of brotherly love, I can easily say he started it.
I didn't say which one.
We all knew you were going to buy me a minivan.
No. I want a real honest experience. And then, you know, we get rid of it, and then I guess I still owe you a Porsche from, you know, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that there's no statute of limitations on that. That doesn't end.
Yep. Night, Bill.
Good night, Stanley.